Morning, Mary. It's lovely to be here with you today. Just to say to our listeners that this recording we're making in light of the publication of this new book, Living with Fear, Reflections on COVID-19. And you wrote an important chapter in that book, which is about the effects of COVID on people who come from Black, Asian, and minority ethnic backgrounds, sometimes summarized to the word BAME. And I think that's a really important chapter and one we should really explore in some depth. But before we get going on to that, perhaps we could start out with you telling us a bit about yourself and how you ended up writing this chapter.
Okay, lovely. Yeah, thank you, Ryan, for having me. My name is Mary Msonyani. I work as a senior lecturer at university. I've been in England now for about over 16 years. I'm from a small little kingdom, completely surrounded by South Africa, called Lesotho. I moved to England for education, for work, all of that. I teach within higher education in bioscience and education and mainly in health studies. So I teach human physiology, the principles behind disease processes, and I've been doing that for quite a while. And also, you know, I've studied psychology at the master's level. I think my journey into psychology actually was something that probably set the passion that I had when I recognized how racial discrimination impacts well-being of people despite their successes. So as a journey, actually, I did a project which explored experiences of life where racial discrimination exists among BAME people actually within higher education. So I was looking at people who are lecturers who are in education to see if because of their status within society that they've achieved, whether racism actually has played part, especially in terms of well-being. And so because of that, I kind of within university end up being one of the them leads for student success, especially in terms of attainment gap. I was interested in the bigger narrative behind that attainment gap. And of course, now it has led into pioneering a BAME network within the university and working with other people as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Great. Right, so let's get on to this issue related to COVID-19 then. So your chapter was about how BAME individuals have been negatively impacted by the pandemic. Can you tell us a bit more about that actual impact?
Yeah. Very interesting, actually, how I decided to write this chapter. Probably, like I said, because I do have a passion about how racism plays at, you know, well-being of people. Interesting because, you know, I often say to people that I lived in Lesotho, I mean, in my life in earlier education, and I studied in South Africa as well, but I had never really experienced apartheid. It never impacted me the way that I've seen it here. And I think that was really a big interest. So when the idea of writing a book about fear of COVID came about, something just struck on me that, you know, I know that when people are in crisis, our humanity does come together. But somehow I knew that there will be layers where the story of this humanity may leave out something that I think is really important, because somehow anything that has to do with, you know, disparities, racism, is very sensitive. So people tend to leave it out of the conversation. So I think my whole aim of writing that chapter was to look at what fear will look like within this group of people. And it was interesting as the story unfolded to actually realize that the impact, as the statistics were showing us, was quite very escalating. It was very high within the BAM groups. I looked at mostly healthcare professionals, obviously. And obviously there could be a debate about majority of healthcare professionals are from BAM communities. So while there would be a lot of other issues, comorbidities as it were, I was really interested to see how that was playing, especially when we looked at globally, even today, the impact among the same group is not as severe as here. So the mortality rates here were really high. And so I just wanted to explore that, really.
So just to clarify, Mary, are you saying that internationally, the impact on BAME people wasn't as severe as we've seen in the UK? So the UK's proportion is higher. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is that when you compare the mortality rates, yes, UK being one of them, but in the Western world, compared to Africa, for instance, the same group of people, maybe Africa and India, they don't seem to be having the same high impact of COVID, which is really a very interesting, narrative. And so I was interested in that to see what may be the layers of it. Why are we seeing a different picture? I mean, I know that, obviously when COVID started, there was lots of myths, as you know, about how people of black people were immune to COVID. It was really interesting to see how this was going around in media. And yet, when really the disease progressed, we saw a different story. But in the Western world, like in America, in UK, for instance, the countries that probably I'm quite well versed with compared to Africa, because obviously I'm interested in Africa because that's where I come from. Yeah.
Okay. In your first answer, you alluded to the fact that healthcare workers have been disproportionately affected, particularly healthcare workers from a BAME background. Can you say a bit more about this impact on healthcare workers? Because obviously, as I understand, this book is, partly aimed at healthcare workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so like I mentioned about high mortality rates in comparison with their white counterparts, there was a lot of fear and anxieties that was really crippling this group of people when this picture was actually manifesting. And also that, they didn't only fear for themselves being in the front line, but they feared for their families as well. And during this time, actually, I had a privilege to be involved in different forums where conversations were actually happening about this whole picture of BAME people dying more. And it was apparent that, there's a lot of investigation still going on, but it was apparent that one of the reasons that the impact was higher in BAME people, as the people were narrating their stories, was because they were put more in front. So they were actually put at risk compared to their white counterparts. And it will appear also that during this time, while their white counterparts will be in high managerial positions, they were the ones that actually were in front of COVID. And many times, some of these people were relating that they were actually afraid to ask to be off or to actually, be in a position where they can refuse to be deployed to where COVID was more rampant. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. So just going back to the larger picture then, and the impact on people from Black and Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds, is it possible that what we're seeing with this isn't some sort of effect of biology, but actually just the fact that this is a kind of larger scale issue of poverty, that decades or perhaps centuries of discrimination mean that people from these backgrounds are essentially, you know, poorer and have, as you've mentioned, sort of lower level jobs, so that the effect is actually about the fact that they're having to live in, you know, in more difficult circumstances.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Ryan, because there's quite a multi-dimensional reality of how racism and poverty can play together. Now, obviously, you can never really say one is exclusively mutual from another, but because I looked at healthcare professionals, when I talk about healthcare professionals, I was looking more about doctors, nurses, you know, people that are in professional positions. So whereby in this group of people, I could say I was excluding poverty as, you know, one of the major factors. But of course, we do know that historically, racial disparities are associated with poverty, because you will find that there will be inequalities in the resources. There will be inequalities in how people actually are able to access some of those privileges that their white counterparts may have. So obviously, we cannot completely exclude poverty. And it's interesting you're asking me that question, because when I was looking at the experience of educators within higher education for my MSc project, I looked at people who were educated because I wanted to exclude poverty as a variable. And very interestingly, that, you know, even though I looked at a group that definitely poverty was not a variable, it appeared that racism played at every stage of their life, even in their successes. So in terms of, you are in a position of having a qualification, a professional qualification. However, your white counterparts are still able to get to higher level management, for instance. So in a way, you are still actually being, you know, in a situation where you are not an equal partner, if we may put it that way. So yeah, there's really quite many layers, because I remember even during the time where the realities, you know, even as the media was portraying this, I remember that one of the comments was made by the mayor of London, you know, Sadiq Khan, where you know, they were looking at the fact that what we see in the pandemic is actually bringing the harsh realities of long-term, you know, existence of racism and health disparities, almost alluding to the fact that a pandemic at this point had actually put these disparities to a sharp focus, and somehow placing race at the top of the list as a social determinant of health.
Well, exactly. I wonder, Mary, whether this, what we're really seeing here with the pandemic, particularly in the UK, is just another example of how structural racism plays itself out. That structural racism is largely invisible, but it sits there structuring how, you know, outcomes across lots of domains play out. Do you see that as a possibility?
Yeah, I really do see that as a possibility, you know, and maybe just reiterating again some of the comments that were made by leaders, you know, during that time. And, you know, it is really apparent that the patterns that we are seeing now with this disproportionality of them deaths from coronavirus are not really random, but instead, they track existing social determinants of health. So in other words, you know, when you look at employment of people, the workforce, for instance, when you look at the workforce within NHS, most of the workforce, the doctors and nurses, I mean, I'm not excluding other groups, but obviously my interest was to get doctors and nurses. You will find that they make the large percentage of the workforce. But when you look at the executive level you will find that these groups are only, you know, there's only a few who actually make it to a position of a consultant, for instance. And this is simply also because of the difficulties of actually navigating systems of racism, because obviously they are woven within such kind of systems. So yeah, indeed, it is, we are seeing the patterns that have always gone on. And I think this is this time as well, because it has put racism so much at the forefront, more people were able to talk. You know, I've seen more people come together, whether black or white, coming in forums where they're discussing all of these disparities as to what needs to be done, for instance, maybe for, you know, ethnic health, if you like. And I, like I was saying, I've been, you know, in a position where I was able to be in some of the forums. And one of the key people, I think his name is Lane Rogers, who wrote a very interesting report, actually. It's called the White Snowy Peaks of the NHS, actually showing that when you look at the NHS, the top executives are white, but when you look at the workforce, people who are actually carrying the work will be mostly the BAM, healthcare professionals.
Thanks, Mary. So last question then. So assuming this is all these things we've been discussing today exist, what should we be doing about it? What should be happening, you know, in healthcare and across society to address these issues?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, Ryan. And it's interesting also that it's not like nothing hasn't been done. There's been attempts actually to try and look at ways that we can overcome the racial disparities. Probably I'll make NHS as my example, because obviously I was talking about you know, the NHS and the BAM staff, probably referring to the same Clayne Rogers about the White Snowy Peaks of NHS. They got funded actually to look at discrimination in general within the NHS. And a lot of initiatives actually came from there, whereby, you know, they were talking about collectively contracting discriminatory behavior. Because when they looked at discrimination in general, they realized that of all categories of discrimination, racism was still at the highest, where BAM staff were more discriminated in terms of their race. So they did come up with training programs, but I think the failure there was the fact that these were put as interventions, but they were not actually acted upon. You know, just like how we can, you know, do an investigation and come up with a report and make recommendations. But unless collectively we actually come together and put those into action, and nothing is going to happen. So I do believe that, and I've seen this actually, that during COVID, there have been a lot of interest, lots of BAM forums where they are taking proactive measures, you know, including government departments as well, policymakers, coming together actually to discuss the way forward. And so I do believe that somehow, even though COVID has impacted our lives in such a in so much darkness, and of course we are still going through the motion, I do feel that there's been an opportunity and a chance for the realization on a wider scale for people to realize that we actually need to come together and to do something about it. In some of the forums that I was actually in, I remember one of them, they invited the NMC, which is the Nursing and Midwifery Council, and also they invited someone from the GMC or, you know, the British Medical Association as well, to try and see how do we work together, how do we empower people of BAM origin in terms of how they can challenge, you know, the systems, whether, you know, they affect them individually or as a collective. I mean, at the moment, we are yet to see the long-term impact of it. But I do know in a lot of some of the reports that the government has produced that all these investigations, all the assessment that they've been doing, they've actually done really amazing packages for risk assessment. So I know that at the moment, you know, because obviously we're in the second wave of COVID, I have had conversations with some of the staff, and they do say that some of this risk assessment, they've been put in place. So one is risk assessed before they can actually be exposed to a COVID ward. And I think there's a bit more collective action and realization where managers are beginning to be aware actually that, you know, the racial disparities, the discriminatory practices, we need to be aware of them. So by conversations, we are coming together to acknowledge and also to take really important steps towards breaking these barriers that put other people at a great disadvantage.
Thank you, Mary. Completely agree with you. So just we'll wrap up now, but just to remind people who are listening that we're having this conversation because of a chapter that you wrote in a recently published book, Living with Fear, Reflections on COVID-19. It's available on Amazon. So if you want to read something about the COVID pandemic and how it's impacted healthcare workers and large society, please go out and buy it. Any profits from the book are getting donated to an NHS charity. So you'd be supporting the NHS. Mary, thanks very much for being with me today. And let's hope we see some progress on this.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Ryan. Yeah.